You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm one of the co-hosts of this wonderful podcast. And joining me on the other line for a depressing Saturday for indie sports fans is Mr. Tony. Tony, we're going to do our five-minute football talk at the end, but anything to cheer up indie sports fans real quick.
Yes, Miles Turner is playing well for his USA compadres. Same with Sabonis with Lithuania. And I moved all my stuff yesterday, which is exciting. So that should cheer you up. But I'm currently sitting in a I'm sitting in a depressing corner of my old apartment right now to get Wi-Fi to do this. But yeah, I guess Jacoby Brissett is good, so that's exciting. But yeah, we'll save our football for the end because we have Pacer stuff first.
Yeah, so we're gonna do three segments, like always. We're going to do the first one on international basketball, basically what we're calling it. A second segment on kind of the over-unders based on some of the 538 stats, ESPN stats in Vegas. And then we'll do a mailbag question we missed last time and then do our five-minute football talk at the end. But like I said, let's start with international talk. So the USA has played, what, two exhibition games? They're not in three. They've made their final roster moves as they now finally head to – I forget where FIBA is this year.
Where is it? Great question. China, I think.
Japan or China?
I think it's China.
Okay. The Olympics are Japan next year. That's where it is.
Yes.
So, yeah. The last game they played, the Miles Turner had, what, a 15-14 game? So, he is
– that was the second to last game they played.
Okay.
They played again and lost to Australia. I only remember that Turner was a +7. I don't remember his exact stats, which is embarrassing. I only remember he was a +7 because they lost. And I was like, oh, I wonder how the lineup did with him in there. And they outscored Australia.
So he had a 4 points, 1 rebound, 2 assists, that one.
Okay. So the second game was clearly his big one when they beat Australia, and he had 15-14. He shot 6 of 8 that game. And the coolest thing to me – well, actually, let's talk about him making the team first. I don't know that, like, this team – you know what I mean? It's not, like, obviously the best Team USA ever, but obviously he was going to make it, right? He was, like, one of the 6 best players on the roster. But even if you add in, like, Towns – like, I don't – he probably still is one of the 3 best American centers, right?
You mean in the whole tournament?
And then the whole – yeah, no, like, this was, like, the peak team. I actually had, like, all those guys. Like, who are the 3 best American centers? Would he still have made it? Oh. Because I see people belittling, like, oh, it's the Bush League Team USA. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, okay, it's not great. I have no qualms giving you that. But – I want to know if he's one of the best 3 American centers.
I get what you mean. In the whole league, he's probably the 5th best center in the league, and the top 2 are European – or not American, sorry.
He's not – yeah. I mean, Gobert and Jokic are all – right. So if you count Davis as a center, then Davis is 1, but he doesn't like playing center. Towns also very good. Vucevic is a good center. He is not Team USA. Nurkic, good center, not Team USA. Al Horford is probably another one ahead of him. So he is probably
– Is he Team USA?
Horford, I believe so. I could be wrong about that, though.
I thought Horford didn't play for the USA.
I don't know the answer to that.
I'm looking it up real quick.
Yes, thank you for that. But yeah, he was born, that, in, it's
born
him,
in, the,
right?
in the Dominican.
Oh, well, there you go.
Horford was born in the Dominican.
And then Drummond is the other one. So those are the 4, right? So I still think he could have made it, and Drummond dropped out. Because he was one of the guys they tried this year, but I still think he could have made it even at like this is the best Team USA, like. So I think it's stupid the whole like oh the Bush League whatever get out of here.
Well, it depends because they probably don't need a center if they're playing with their best players, right?
True. I mean, like, yeah,
you just kind of patchwork center between some of Kevin Durant, some of Anthony Davis. Like if you're going the best 12 American players. You don't need a center because there's nobody else who's going to really challenge
that
you.
That is
like,
true.
There's not something like I think in the – you go back to like the 90s, you needed a center because Hakeem was going to kill you, right? He was like the – and the guy who's going to kill you, maybe the tournament is Giannis.
Or Jokic.
But really, you don't need a center to guard – or Jokic, but you don't need a center to guard those guys. You can put a Kevin Durant. You can put a LeBron.
True.
Whatever kind of player on one of those guys. Those guys are not – the only I can see is you may need a guy to go up against Embiid, but I'm not sure Turner even gives you anything better than like Kevin Durant.
Embiid is not in this summer. But yeah, I think of the centers, he probably still makes it. Maybe not. I don't know. But it's still cool that he is, especially after that insane game he had against Australia. He's fitting well. And I don't know, Adam, how much you've actually watched, but something that is interesting to me that's happening with this FIBA team is even with Turner and Brook Lopez out there, they're doing a lot more pick and roll instead of pick and pop, even with Turner. And he's actually had some nice like passing plays and decision making in the pick and roll. It's been pretty interesting to see him develop in that way.
Yeah, and I think it's good for him to get some better coaching too, or different coaching.
You're projecting, Adam.
I know, different coaching. I mean, Pop is best coach in the league, and Kerr is probably number two there. So, I mean, those are two of the best coaches, so it's good to get that. But I think him making the team and having the experience here is nowhere it could be. It cannot be negative unless it ended up being an injury of some kind where he got hurt somewhere like Paul George. The only way that's only to go bad, but I just – first of all, they're not playing that stupid Las Vegas gym, so it doesn't matter. And I just don't see how this can go bad, I guess. But you know what? As Indiana fans, you know, we always find a way something to go wrong for us at some point.
Yeah, of course. And I don't know if this is like – what people talk about Team USA always for pros for your team is, one, like you already said, they get the coaching. Like it's Pop and Kerr. That doesn't need to be overstated. You can even see him doing things he doesn't do as often with the Pacers. Some of that is the scheme of their offense. Some of that is he's never shown it before and shouldn't get the opportunity, frankly. And the third thing to me is like when you're playing with the best players and you see what they're doing, I think just being around them helps you get better, even if it's just like osmosis or I don't even know what to call it. But being in the environment with, again, we've established this isn't like the best Team USA, but it's still very good players. Like they're probably the tournament favorites. I don't know. Serbia is looking real good. But you know, being around those guys is helpful for your skill development and you can recruit a little bit, which is always cool.
Yeah, I think the number one thing that's going to help Turner is it's just going to show up to the season in better shape than he could have even if he was training. That's the biggest thing. I don't know if I buy into like – I mean, him playing higher level competitive basketball than he could play anywhere else in the offseason is what's the best part of it, right? And I don't think I buy the fact that like he's going to learn that much from the coaching, that he's going to recruit or whatnot, but I think just playing basketball, maybe not at the top level because you're not playing NBA basketball, but playing basketball at the highest level possible in the summer – is good when you start the year because then you start the year a little bit fresher, which the Pacers are going to need because they're going to need him to come in and kind of be – and really him and Sabonis are going to come in and be pretty good to start because they're not going to have their best player. So I don't know how this – I guess it could be a bad thing. It kind of helps keep them in really good shape and keep them kind of
going. It's real games with real strategy, right? Like double teams will happen, Devin Booker. So guys can work on their games in those ways. Did you see that video? Have we talked about that? Devin Booker got double teamed. You have seen it. You just said we haven't talked about it. Yeah. that was so funny to me. I don't know how I feel about that because I understand what he's saying, but I also understand like the get better thing. But Turner is not playing those. He is playing real games with real strategy. So, yeah. If you're right that none of the things really matter, they're not like nothing. You know, they're not negative things.
No. Yeah, like I said, there's no way this could go negative unless he gets hurt.
Exactly.
And I think the other positive of it, too, is that it provides him kind of a taste of what it is to be sort of a top-level player. You know, so, like, he is a top, whatever we call it, 40, 50 player. But he's not, like, one of these elite players where, like, I don't know, he's probably somewhat recognized on the streets, but maybe not everywhere, right? But when you're kind of on Team USA and in these foreign countries, he's going to be recognized, and it sort of gives him a taste of, like, oh, if I get to that next level of superstar, I can be the kind of, like, I walk into a room, everybody knows who I am, kind of move. Now, he is 7 feet tall, so I'm assuming when he walks in a room, but you know what I mean by like LeBron walks in a room or Kevin Durant walks in a room, it's like that, you know, there's all these whispers, whatever, that's who that is. When it's Turner, I'm not sure anybody's like, more like, oh, who is that tall? Does he play basketball kind of thing versus like, oh, that's
LeBron. Absolutely. And he's starting, right? So there's even more even the tiniest bit more recognition from that as well. Well, he didn't say anything.
Get a shot at 2020.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got, like we established, one of the four or five best USA centers. If he improves this year, Drummond has free agency next summer. You know, maybe it's different for him. I don't know. We'll have to see.
And we'll see where he plays the USA roster next year, too.
Yeah, who wants to play, who doesn't. So Turner's stats right now through the three exhibition games, he started against Australia twice but did not start against Spain. They had Brook Lopez start that game. In only 17 minutes a game, he's averaging 9 and 6, which is 6 rebounds is almost his season average of rebounds, and he's doing that in 17 minutes. So pretty sweet, if you ask me. Shooting well from the field, too, 50% so far. So, or 50% from three, excuse me, 71% from the field so far. It's pretty damn good.
Yeah. So on the other side, we weren't really able to get any Sabonis stats.
It's right? So hard to find these European exhibition game stats. I can find individual games from the Pacers website, but I can't tell you averages. And I've only seen clips of the games. I haven't seen any full games. So I'm kind of going off of what I've heard from other people. I will start with an anecdote, though. I think it's good that he's playing a lot with Valanciunas. Get him out there with another center so we can prep for the season, right?
I will say it's true that the best thing we saw from Sabonis is I saw a really nice Instagram picture of him where he looks pretty ripped. That's the best thing I've seen of
Sabonis. Staying in shape, right, for the season with the high level like this.
Yeah, I mean, no, I agree. Putting against Valanciunas is good. It helps put him in a comfortability of where he's going to end up being, right? He's going to end up playing that second center role or power forward role, I guess so. You know, and gets used to the weird spacing, it's better for the
I want to look up like how he played with Steven Adams, but I know he was like a perimeter player and it was his rookie year, so I'm not sure how relevant it's going to be, but I need to look more into that. I think that
he was bad.
He started off really well as a 3-point shooter and then kind of cratered, so I think it'd be very interesting to look more into that. I mean,
he was also he was 2 years out of college.
Yeah, true.
He was basically 20 years old playing with a team that
wanted him to be really good.
Yeah, that team, like when he got drafted, had hopes of being kind of like an NBA finals contender. Then that got pulled out when Kevin Durant left, but was supposed to still be good. And Wes Westbrook was basically hogging the ball the entire year. Like, I think anything from that season has to be taken with a lot of skepticism, one, because of his age and because of the team he played with, because that was probably the most, like, that was probably the weirdest NBA team, like, season. You know what
I mean? Yeah, Russ's usage was like a bajillion percent. It was nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I would put that up there with this year's Harden season with like one of those Kobe years. I think it was 08 where he had like 30 something. Yeah. Like, these just weird years where these players are just like hell bent on winning the MVP award with no matter what it does to everybody else.
That's true. So, first game against Russia, the first game Lithuania played, they played, my gosh, I'm looking right at this, Finland, and they won 80-60. He had 11 points. In their second game, they played Russia, he had 25 and 13. That's pretty damn good. So he's playing well with them. And then he got sick, I believe, and didn't play in one of their games. And then he did play again recently. I think this was a few days ago against Angola. And he had 3 of 6 shooting in that game for 7 points and 9 rebounds. So pretty Sabonis-esque rebounding numbers in these exhibitions.
Does he get sick way too much?
He does get sick a lot. If it's food poisoning, he just has to stop eating. Like, he needs a dietitian with him all the time.
Yeah, he needs to hydrate better, I would guess. I just feel like somebody who has a lot of colds, you probably need to like have a higher vitamin C dosage in your breath.
We don't talk enough about the great shrimp taco problem the Pace had last season. Like, this happened multiple times.
Yeah, I don't understand is these guys are professional athletes. There are. This team together is $100 million plus team plus whatever, really more than that is what they make, and yet the team can't hire some like dietitian and say we're gonna eat this, this, and this everywhere we go. We're gonna make sure we're not gonna try weird fish. We're not gonna like you every morning. You're gonna drink this much water. Like, you know, these are professional athletes. Why can't I don't understand how they get sick so much?
Yeah, it's very interesting. But yeah, Sabonis playing well for the Lithuanian team. Unfortunately, I can't do as many like. Turner's been passing more like kind of things because again, it's impossible to find these games. Some people have them on Twitter. You can watch like highlights, but again, I can't watch whole games to really dive in. I am just Kalen Cooper leading this charge again, but it is disappointing that the only way we'll see Sabonis versus Turner would be the quarterfinal. So I think they both have to win their group or one of them has to get second in their group or something. I don't remember. It's not like impossible given the way that things would shake out, but it doesn't look like it will happen.
Yeah, they're gonna need some luck or some interesting draw. I mean, I don't know. Lithuania considered one of the top teams or no? I don't really.
Lithuania is good, but Lithuania is ranked 6th in the world right now.
Okay, so they should be in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, yeah. It's like if the bracket has to break a certain way, like with seeds or something.
No, but if both teams make it to the final four, there's an opportunity. They probably
There's a chance. There's a chance. We'll see.
They just won't get to play each other in the first round because they're in different groups.
Right. So we'll see.
And when is the tournament start?
August 31st, right? Yeah. So next time we're talking, they'll be real games.
and we'll be able to actually talk about some of this, this stuff, because there'll be some highlights. There'll actually be some box scores that are easier to read and understand, and there'll be some real kind of actual basketball where guys are playing more minutes.
Unfortunately, Corey Joseph dropped out, and Thad got cut, and Goga's not, like, we don't have any anyone else who is on a team to talk about, unfortunately.
Well, the Pacers' second and third best player are playing, so it's not like...
I know. But, like they were close to having four guys to talk about, but alas.
Yeah. I mean, I assume next year we'll... Well, Vic will probably... Will he play for USA
next year? He could.
Well, will he play for the USA, or will he go play for... He's from America, right? His parents are from Nigeria, right?
He went to Team USA minicamp last summer. Remember the video of him hitting the fadeaway over KD that everybody loved?
That's right. Did he play in the Afro Games like one of the year just as like a kind of a – or did he travel over there for something?
But that's not – that. Okay. Yeah, that's just like all sorts of
Yeah. That's just,
right.
It's promotional. Promote the league and stuff like that. So,
yeah. All right. That was fun. Yeah. I'm glad there's actual basketball to watch instead of like us talking about cereal boxes.
Well, we're getting there. It'll be real basketball next week. And then that'll be about 2 weeks, give or take. And then training camp starts kind of soon. The preseason starts –
Media days for like 2 or 3 weeks. That's a lot of stuff to talk about right there.
Yeah, so we're starting to get into like the pre-basketball months, and then we'll hit the NBA and it'll be rolling.
This is the last August show, and August is easily the worst month of basketball content, so we made it.
By far. We haven't made it yet. We still have two more segments. Let's take a quick break, and on the other side, we'll talk about some of the over-unders. All right, welcome back in the Locked On Pacers podcast. So we're going to do over-unders of comparing Vegas, 538, ESPN, all that stuff to sort of, I don't know, talk about the Pacers and what we see as their win.
This exercise, so Andy Bailey, Bleacher Report Forbes, does all the aggregating of stats and stuff all the time. He took Vegas's over-under win total, 538's projected season win total for each team, ESPN's projected season win total for each team, and Jacob Goldstein's PIPM analytical projections for each team's record, and put it all into one thing so you can see them all, and then averaged all of the win totals, and then used the averages to rank where each team would be, which I think is interesting. So, Adam, what pops to me about the Pacers, and I'm trying to find another team with as wide of a spread as them from the thing that has them the highest to the thing that has them the lowest, because – Vegas has them at 47.5, and 538 only has them at 40. And I don't see another team that has any two projections that differ by more than 7.5.
So it's worth noting 538 has two different versions of the projection as well. Yep. They have their ELO projection and then their Carmelo projection, which I think is tied to Carmelo Anthony some way. But one has them Pacers at the Carmelo rings at the Pacers at 39 wins, and the ELO is Pacers at 42. So I'm assuming. Andy's. I mean, maybe at one point
changed.
It was 40.
Yeah, right. Maybe it changed a little bit.
Yeah. So if you look at it, Portland's is about 7 off as well on the same thing. Besides that, yeah, you're right. We're talking. Everyone is within a couple games. You know,
the Spurs is a big one.
Nets are 6. So the Nets are also 6 off too.
Yeah. So it's still not 7. It's still not 7.5.
Yeah. No. You're the only. Okay. Grizzlies. Grizzlies are 27.5, and 538 has them winning 35. Wow.
I'm more in line with Vegas. So.
And the Suns, same way, which I don't. The Suns winning 36 games is
being terrible. Yeah. Oh, look at ESPN has them at 38.
What? We're going to look like idiots when the Suns and the Bobcats. As Hornets both make the playoffs this year after we've for the 2 months.
So anyway, I talked about the big spread because I think that kind of is a good like leaping off point to discuss how their season could go. And as we talked about many times, like there are a lot of things that like critical paths that will affect their record. How good does this pairing work? How long is Victor Oladipo? All these, they have so many new players, like all these things that give them this wide range are reflected in the way that these people do their projections.
Yeah. And I think also it's really how much do you take in the count that they have a new roster and how would that affect their start? And then you throw the injury top of that and you play. And that's sort of, that's where you create this kind of variable where like Vegas is probably relying on the team has consistently won, 45 games for now, 3 or 4 straight seasons, give or take 45 or more. They had that. Basically, they've had in the 2010 decade, they basically had 2 years where they were like below 500 or at that, where they were 42 and 40 and 39. That was because of injuries basically both times.
Yep.
Otherwise, they basically been a 45 plus win team every year, no matter who is in the roster.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a safe bet. You know, it depends on it. Like if they think Vic's going to be back earlier in the projection, like they clearly improved his surrounding talent. So if you just go on that alone, like if they're a little better than 500 with him out, or if they're 500 with him out again, and then he comes back early, then yeah, 47 makes a lot of sense. So I totally get all of these numbers, like how this could happen. I haven't even said the average of all four is 43.35 wins. So basically, if you had an over-under from that, it'd be 43.5, which we're a little bit split on that, but we're both close to it.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that really gets from this whole thing is the Magic being so high.
Yeah, a lot of places have the Magic really high, and I think the Magic are going to be good, like fine. You know, they can't be worse than last year. They basically have the same roster plus a little bit, but I don't know. Just it feels a little too high. I don't know why.
Who's their coach now? Clifford?
They still have Clifford, yeah.
Right, they replaced Vogel last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I just
– So
they made the playoffs last year, right? And that was a big thing with them.
The reason Adam brought up the Magic is because they're the team immediately in front of the Pacers, right? So the Pacers are 6th in the East using this method of wins with the Bucks 1, Sixers 2, Celtics 3 that everybody's going to have, and then Raptors 4, Magic 5. And the Magic is the one that everybody goes, what? The Magic? Like, but I mean, there's a reason for it, but yeah, go ahead. They're fresh and new and confusing kind of.
I mean, maybe it's just my bias to watch the Magic play the past 6, 7 seasons. I just don't think they win that many games.
Yeah, they've been horrible.
Well, no, Dwight Howard era ended in 2012, right? True. Dwight left there. They were still good till then. They made the playoffs that last year. He was there.
Dwight on the Lakers, Adam. Wow.
I know. We don't need to talk about that right now.
Comical. Yeah. Comedy. I get it. Like I don't think the Magic are worse than last year, but what did they win last year? 42? Like, I don't think they're that much better. That's right. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the way this thing, it really sees everybody in the East coming back down to them.
Yeah, except the Bucks.
Right? Well, no, but it shows the Raptors coming down to them, Pacers coming back down to them.
The Nets
coming below, way below them, apparently. I mean, I don't know. I like this exercise for what Bailey did here with kind of lining them all up, but it just, to me, the 538 seems like it's totally different than everybody else, I guess.
Yeah, well, theirs have usually been the worst of the bunch.
Yeah, and I mean, because those don't rely on – some of basketball, I think, can't be predicted analytically, I guess, in a way.
Oh, yeah,
like, some absolutely. Of it is just, like, certain guys show up – like, analytically, like, you would never guess Lance Stephenson won the Pacers, like, 3 games.
Every year – I always try to think of this before the season starts. Every year there's one team that everybody thinks is going to be mediocre or bad and ends up being pretty good. 2 years ago, it was the Pacers. Last year, it was the Kings. You know, every year there's one team that it happens to. And
maybe the Nets even last year.
Yeah, great point. Even the Magic a little bit. Less so, but still. So, like, someone of the morass of Suns, Wizards, Grizzlies, Hawks, Hornets, Knicks, Cavs, like, one, or Timberwolves even, like, one of them is going to be, like, probably okay. You know, it just happens that way every year. And you try your best to predict it as these people whose job it is, but it's hard.
And I think it's usually it's pretty easy to predict the top like 5 teams in this conference. Like, just kind of know. You know it's going to be good. And none of those teams usually that are going to be good ever actually end up being like so much worse than you thought, right? Like, there's no, like, I've never felt a year besides something where an injury happened where I thought a team was going to win like 50 games and they won 30.
Yeah,
right?
I agree.
That just doesn't really happen in the NBA because it's so talent driven. Another thing worth noting is that it feels like the Pacers win total is maybe not where people project them being in the playoff, like a playoff run. You know what I mean? I think it really, absolutely, a lot of this is kind of hinging on the Victor Oladipo aspect
and
of it, right?
The 5-4 series would be they'd probably be the favorite, you know, even if they're the 5 seed. I think they're the favorite in that instance.
Yeah.
So, and Adam, don't go too far into that because that's our mailbag question.
Oh, true. Other thing I want to mention, I've just because I've kind of thought of it now, the amount of, so Stephen A. Smith, who is a I can't say I love him the most, but every year he always talks about the Pacers being a threat. Like, I heard it on some podcast this week already once with him. And it seems like it relates to this over-under in a way that every year the Pacers, I think, are a little bit underestimated by most things because of whatever reason they're kind of an overlooked market and stuff like that. And they end up doing better just because of the infrastructure. And that's kind of what I think is betting on. with their 47.
Stephen A is interesting because his sport takes are just like anecdotal and not awesome, but him, the character, is awesome.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah. I mean, I think his Indiana thing each year is just like, I think he, you know, the year Jeff Teague was there, he just, for some reason, he likes to buy into the Pacers being decent.
Yeah. Good for him, man.
It's up and down.
Yeah.
I don't know. I look at the sheet and I think it's a good indication of kind of where do you have 45 wins? 40,
I forget. 45? I think I had 44 or 43. I did not have 45. I was lower than that.
Okay. And I think I had like 47. So, I mean, I think it's a good indication we think where they're going to be at. And then this 40 range, I think it really depends on how the rest of the East falls around.
Yep.
Because I think the Nets being a 40-win team is sort of very low.
The Nets are my highest variance team of the year. If you told me they won like 32 or 35 games, I'd be like, yep, I totally get that. And if you told me they won like 52 games, I'd be like, okay, I totally get it.
Do we all forget that Kyrie's just like a really good basketball player?
Yeah, Kyrie's amazing.
Like top 10 when he's healthy, borderline. Mm-hmm. I mean, like he's just really good. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how
here's the thing, like if Kyrie misses 20 games, then let's go what, like 5-15?
Yeah, but they're not
the healthiest.
They're not like a bad. Their roster basically all they're doing is replacing him with, Russell. You know what I mean? That's all they're doing.
Russell still played a lot of games last year, and Kyrie is only over 72-1 ever. Crazy. Like, you don't think of him as injury prone, but he misses a lot of games.
Yeah, I mean that's. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think we looked at it. Well, he's played 60 games, maybe more than like two or three times in his career. He mainly
plays. Yeah, we'll see. Again, they're high variance. He could be healthy, and they could.
So maybe
be
that's awesome. What it is.
Great.
I don't know.
We'll see. I'm looking forward to
it. So based on this, do you believe there will be a third 50-win team in the East? There hasn't been in a while.
Definitely the Bucks are going to be one. They're going to be awesome again. The Sixers probably are good enough. I mean, they didn't get that much worse this summer, and the East around them did, so they'll have a few more easy ones there. It depends on how much the Celtics click, right? If it all works out, then they could do it, but I don't think so. No, I think it's gonna be two.
Right. I think last year was there a third 51 team last year? There wasn't, right?
No.
Toronto, Milwaukee.
No, yeah, there was. Toronto, Milwaukee and Philly all got it.
The Philly get a 51. They're pretty close.
Yeah, they all got it.
Okay.
I don't know. I believe they all got it. I would like to look that up now.
Yeah. I know 2 years ago, I think Philly got there too, barely, right? They had the 49.
They had like a 17-game win streak or something at the end.
It's because they played a bunch of teams that were tanking.
Yes, Philly got the one last year. There were three.
That's the thing too. We didn't do it enough. Look at the Pacers schedule, what teams will be tanking in March, because that's an easy win.
I tried a little. I didn't do great on it, but yeah. Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, that's also why.
Right. Much. Yeah, I think this exercise is interesting just to see how, you know, I think some of the differences in these have to do with like Kevin Pelton, he's the ESPN guy who does this. So after he does it, he releases how many minutes he thinks each player will play, because that's built into how well he thinks each team does. And because of that, and I know how the PIPM projections are made, which also has a minutes thing, I think a lot of it or some of the differences can be explained by, you know, how many minutes they have Oladipo at, and that's a big factor. So,
yes, I think that is a huge factor.
And another thing is, if I had to rank these from usually most right to most wrong, Vegas would probably be the closest to most right, correct? So, them being the highest is something.
Time and time again, Vegas seems to be right, because you know why? Those casinos tend to keep growing in size.
Yes, they do.
I mean, they seem to be able to have a good pulse on like what they think will happen, partially what like past history indicates for future.
They're very good at what they do. And yeah, another thing is like the other three, like if ESPN is wrong, nothing happens. If 5:30 is wrong, nothing really happens. If Vegas is wrong, they lose a shit ton of money. So
exactly. So that's why and they might be more conservative than that. It's being better for them to be more conservative, where 538 might be more like, we're going to follow our formula until the death, which is fine. That's what they're kind of made for.
Site. All right, let's do our last segment. We got a mailbag question we missed, and then our new summer thing, our football 5 minutes. So stick around.
All right, welcome back in the Locked On Pacers podcast. Tony, you got the question
teed up. Ready to go? I didn't tell you this. So one of the questions – we got two questions after the first episode, and one was One was from my neighbor, though, who I played basketball with outdoors a lot as a kid. And he said, who was a better shooter, Doug McDermott from the corner or me from the top of the key on my neighbor's driveway? And this is the first proof that I have that I did, in fact, have one spot on a basketball court where I was actually a competent player. So there you go, everybody. The answer is McDermott.
Yeah.
So Jake was the person who asked Jake, man, he was really good. He was a manager for the Purdue team. Okay, the real actual Pacers question comes from at Oladipo Burner, who the week after asking the question said we're the best Pacers pod out there. We appreciate that. But he asked it after we recorded, so unfortunately we didn't get it in. But now we can do it. He says, how good do you think Vic will be come playoff time in 2019-20? And then a follow-up of how far do you think the Pacers can make it in 2019-20? So the second part of the question depends on the first part of the question, right? 100%. So if he is at full strength, and we kind of just talked about this in the prior segment, like him at full strength means they're like the best five seed ever if they're the five seed or something like that. And they could probably be favored against a four seed, so they could win a series like that. I don't know how – like if him at full strength, are they better than Boston? Are they the same as Boston? But we have to answer the first question before we can get to that, which is do we think he can be as good as he – like as good as peak Pacers Oladipo has been come playoff time? I will not say yes. My answer is probably not that good.
I don't know if he's ever going to be as good as he was his first time ever again.
Yes, every line of evidence ever says that no, that he will not be. Just like hearing all the – I hate injury, like long injuries like this updates because every single one is going to be optimistic, right? They have months and months of time to figure it out. They might as well just be like, yeah, things are going great. So it seems like, oh, great, he's doing great, and like he's going to be great. But it's like you can never know. And every other player who's come back from this has not been as good.
Yeah, I just don't know if he has he has the history where it's just he's going to get hurt again or something else. He's just not going to stay. You know what I mean? He's the kind of guy who every play he puts his body on the line. He did that all year – that great year, and he had a great injury luck year where he did land wrong a couple times. He managed to land without hurting himself. He maybe had a little knee injury here or there, but nothing that was like crazy bad. He doesn't quite have the body type where I feel secure that he can just throw his body around and be okay. Like Westbrook has got Westbrook still gets hurt every few years, but like has the size where he can throw himself around and he's not going to like just fall apart. Well, he puts a little bit thinner and a little more, I don't know, frailer than a guy like Russ or a guy, I'm trying to think of another good example, maybe a guy like Chris Paul, for example, who put their bottom line all the time. So that's where it worries me is that I'm not sure he's ever going to have a year where he's going to be as healthy as he was that 17-18 year. Could he have stretches where he looks as good? Yeah. Could he play 40 games this year and be okay, but in the playoffs kind of turn it on and be really good? Yeah, that's for sure. He could have a nice 30-game run here and there. I think they need to get a roster around him that allows him to do that in a way because I don't think he can be the two-way guy they want him to be. He needs to sort of be like – the second or third option on defense and the go-to guy on offense at times and kind of figure out how to find moments for him to succeed in a way. But I don't know if he's ever going to put together, you know, a 100-game run like a LeBron can or I say Kevin Durant who got hurt this year too, but like those kind of guys can. But I think he could definitely put together a 40-50-game run where he's really good. And if it's the right 40-50 games, it could be enough to get him to a NBA finals in the next two or three seasons. Like I don't think he's going to be worse like in terms of just – per game, I think per game he could be the same level, but I don't think he will have sustained success yet in 17.
I agree with that. That was well put. The thing you said that I thought was most interesting in there was the surrounding talent part, and I think Brogdon helps in that way, right? Because now he doesn't have to be the two-way guy. They actually have another guard who can guard the best guard on the other team. I just said guard so many times. Defend. But yeah, I think that'll help him in a way. It'll allow him to exert more of his effort on offense. That's helped a lot of other players in the past, so hopefully that can help. But yeah, I'm with you that I don't think he will be like maybe he can have a playoff game where he's or a couple playoff games where he's like the Vic, but I don't think all of them that will be the case.
No, and even when he was good in 17-18, he had three or maybe we'll say two crappy playoff games against the Cavs. He played really bad in game 3, 4, and 5 that series. He turned it around in game 6, 7 and game one, he played amazing. Yeah. I mean,
but if they get three of those games in the first round, they could win a series if they're playing the right opponent.
You also only have to be good for 4 of 7 games.
Not even that. I bet they could win one if it was like meh.
Yeah, I mean, they did. They won that Bogdan game without him. So, I mean, some of this running talent has to do with the guys around him that they already currently have kind of turning into the players that they could be in their mid-20s. I mean, not that like we're expecting Turner to become or Spence to become like this awesome two-way or whatever player, or like 30-game kind of 20-game kind of player, but like when guys hit their 25, they're supposed to be at their best, you know, their peak level. And so you should see some kind of like that kind of level out of Sabonis and Turner, you know, in the next two or three seasons,
absolutely.
Right? Theoretically. Where those guys could be able to play 75 games and be able to play 35 minutes, stuff like that. Because they're the peak athletic ability where Oladipo might not be at his peak anymore, but he'll be still at in peak moments.
I'm with you. That was a good question, though. That'll be interesting because they both tie in together and it matters a lot. And we cannot tell you more until he's playing basketball games.
Yeah, and to me, for the Pacers, it's always been about being the team that is one injury away from being an NBA Finals contender. I think this is a really good example of the 2012-13 team where they went up against the Heat and Chris Bosh got hurt, and that gave the Pacers an opportunity that season to really have a shot. I mean, I'm thinking 11-12. Maybe 11-12, I'm thinking, where Chris Bosh got hurt, and a window opened up for about basically seven games where you could beat the Heat because they didn't have the depth and they only had LeBron and Wade, and if you could figure out how to beat them at 3-9, you could maybe beat them, and they got close-ish. I mean, that kind of window, the same way window opened this year for the Raptors. Like, that's where you kind of be, is that, like, injury away, because as we saw this year, injuries happen. The worst moments happen to the Cavs years ago, too, and that's how the Warriors are able to win easier. I mean, it's just that's where you want to be, is that injury away.
That's what everybody was saying all summer. Like, as soon as Boogie signed with the Warriors, everybody was like, oh, why does everybody else even try? It's like, well, they just didn't win the title. Like, that's why you try, because if someone else gets hurt, you can win. And look at that. The Raptors won. But yeah, I'm right there.
And injuries always swing the title every year. Injuries.
You are exactly right about that. All right, I'm gonna sit on the sidelines here, but I think it's time for our football 5 minutes.
Well, speaking of players in their prime,
no kidding.
The 29-year-old Andrew Luck decided to retire from the NFL 2 weeks before a Super Bowl possible run. You know, I think I understand his decision. Because, I mean, as a person, I can understand why would anybody ever want to play football ever? It is the dangerous, kind of one of the worst sports, basically, I think, in America that we have out there. It's people constantly get hurt, head injuries. The owners ignore the players' injuries. They don't care. They aren't collective. They aren't paid really right for their talent. Their contracts are on a limb, all this kind of stuff. You know, the sport itself is sort of a violent, it's based around basically Viagra and beer, essentially. I mean, it's just not a great sport, to be honest, in general. It's just not. And I understand why he retired. Saying that, it's still sad as a sports fan or a Colts fan, because this team is going to be really good. They had a shot to be like there's a 3-5 window right now where the Colts could have been Super Bowl contenders every year. And I think fans initially booing, you have to sort of like – If they boom in 2 weeks he returns, that's where you have to get a problem. But like in the moment, I understand the reaction, because it's like he basically just shut the door on the Super Bowl window for what feels like no good reason. I mean, I understand the reason, but it feels at the moment like really because he couldn't end the ankle injury or whatever it was, he closed the door on what was going to be maybe the best 3-5 to run in the franchise.
The booing is so interesting because he was only on the field because I don't think he thought it was going to get out during the game, right? There's no way he thought – somehow it'd get leaked during the game, or else he wouldn't have been on the field.
And I think the booing is it's such a reaction.
It is.
I mean, I think this idea that like, sports fans are supposed to have like this, like take a step back in the moment and feel like even the Raptors fans, they booed KD. Like, yeah, in hindsight, it's stupid and terrible thing to do, but like in the moment, it's like you're just reacting to what you see on the field, and we're all human beings and we just react to what's going on. I think you give it a week. If Luck returns in 3 weeks to just on the sidelines and they boo him, then you can get mad at them. You know, the same way if Raptors fans are, once they realize KD was actually really hurt, stop cheering kind of thing. I mean, it's sort of like that. It just sucks, I think, honestly, right now. I mean, just as an indie sports fan, because it feels like there was a window here for the Colts to win maybe two or three Super Bowls, theoretically. You know, they had the right GM, the right coach. They had finally fixed everything else. They had a really good roster, and it's probably where the window was shut. I mean, maybe Brissett is going to be good and we're all – and that happens, you know, as Colts fans will get over Luck pretty fast. But, you know, the easiest way to get over Manning was Luck pretty much. But most franchises don't find their quarterbacks. It takes them decades to find a quarterback, and Colts had found two with really out any stopping, and that's going to just – this franchise bag a ton.
Yeah, it's so shocking. Like, it's the biggest – that's the biggest sports story like almost in a decade. Besides, like, Aaron Hernandez, right? That's the biggest football story of the decade.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the biggest retirement since Jordan.
Oh, for sure. And Barry Sanders.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Luck, though, is that I know he hadn't won a championship yet, but he's maybe one of the top three quarterbacks in the league leaving in his prime. I mean, that's like what Jordan did, basically, the best player in the league. I mean, Luck's not the best player in the league. I think, you know, Brady's probably still the best till he eventually falls off, or Mahomes is better last year than him, stuff like that. But, like, a guy leaving in his prime is just unheard of. But if you don't love the sport you're playing, you shouldn't play it. I mean, he's got enough money, made enough money. He got paid for what he did. I'm sure he doesn't ever need the money to begin with. His father's vice president of this and NCAA that. I mean, his father's a pretty well-off guy. Luck's really smart. So I don't know. I mean, just I get why he did it. I'm still allowed to be sad by it.
Absolutely. I think that's a very reasonable take. And I'm happy for him to be getting what he wants, because it sounds like he'd been like really beat up over thinking about it for so long, for like weeks like that.
Yeah. And I mean, I think he hasn't been in the same place since that injury filled season a few years ago. I think he just mentally was exhausted. Like, it just, I mean, it's, we don't know what it's like to get hit as many times as he gets hit and what it does to your body. And there's somebody who clearly is really smart and really thinks about the bigger picture, that wants to really have a future after football. And, you know, if he had kept getting hit, he might have sacrificed his ability to walk in 20, 30 years. And like, for a guy who I think has goals and aspirations that are definitely not just football related, that's something you just can't, you don't want to risk. You know, you don't want to risk the brain that he has for a sport that he's not even happy playing anymore.
Right. Well, to cheer you up a little bit, Adam, I think even with Jacoby starting, the Colts are better than my Vikings. So that's exciting for you guys.
To turn positive, I think – sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and the most common name I've seen thrown around for the Colts possibly getting a quarterback is Sam Bradford. And let me tell you, as a Vikings fan, Sam Bradford is bad, so hopefully that doesn't happen. And so currently, as of recording, you don't have Sam Bradford, so be happy about that.
I think Brissett can be fine.
Yeah, me too.
I think they should give him a shot. Brissett's got 1 year left on his deal. They've talked him up as being a top 20 quarterback. I mean, Reich says it every other time for the past two offseasons. Like, give him a shot. If you stink, then you'll get a quarterback in the draft next year. I mean, what's the worst? That's the worst happen. I mean, I think it should be okay. Really, the players I feel the most bad for is a guy like T.Y. Hilton, who three more years with Luck, and Hilton might have had a Hall of Fame career. Now, he still might. I don't know. I mean, Hilton's a great player, but like, Hilton was on track to maybe be a Hall of Fame player someday if they won a Super Bowl and he had another Bowl. You know, and without, you know, and you need a guy like Luck to do that. I mean, imagine if, you know, Peyton Manning abruptly retired in 06 and Reggie Wayne may never have a Hall of Fame career he had. So, I mean, it's just, that's who I feel most bad for, is the guys who came to this team to play for Luck because they knew he was great and they wanted to kind of feed off of that greatness, and now they're kind of not going to have that.
But, yeah.
You know, they're professional athletes, you're getting paid money. That's what they do. They have to figure it out.
Right. That was a good football 5 minutes. We actually had quite a big breaking news story to talk about.
Yeah, I think the next – as we do these throughout the season, we'll be a little more positive.
I don't know.
I'm honestly just going to stop talking about Luck.
Once the Pacers start, I don't think we'll do these anymore, right?
Maybe on our
Sunday
shows.
Yeah, maybe on the week show.
Our Monday shows, I don't know.
We'll see. We'll have to do it after Vikings and Colts play.
But I promise from now on, if we do a football minute, there will be no discussion of Luck. We'll just leave him out.
Well, okay, I'll end it with this.
That's what he wanted.
Right? At the Vikings preseason game, this guy wore a Blair Walsh jersey, but the Walsh was printed like on his left sleeve, so it looked like it was wide left. It was very funny.
That's funny.
A good jersey.
I laughed at that. I mean, they're definitely – as a Colts fan, there's definitely worse franchises you could be fans of. I mean, the Colts do have a Super Bowl. I mean, the Vikings come to mind as just one of the most tortured franchises in sports, to be honest. I mean, the amount of field goals that they've screwed up in the biggest moments, or the interceptions in the biggest moments. I mean, it's not to like just pile onto you, but like them, the Jets are another team I can think of that are tortured. The Bills, like, there are worse teams to be fans of than the Colts and Pacers.
So this is like, you know how sometimes you just say like, oh, I could score a basket on whatever crappy NBA player, and you're mostly being facetious, but like, I legitimately can make a field goal of the distance that Blair Walsh missed that field goal from. Like, it's incredible.
Remember, it was like -32 outside. Could you have made that field goal?
I don't know about that. It was less than an extra point distance, and he missed.
Like I said, there are worse franchises to be fans of. There definitely are. Minnesota.
My dad never calls me in the moment for sports things. Like, he always waits and then like talks about it. The second that kick was missed, he called.
I mean, you're lucky you're not a Minnesota fan for every sport, because I mean, that is one of the most tortured cities in terms of sports. I mean, the Twins have gotten screwed out of who knows how many different times in the 2000s when they played the Yankees or stuff like that. Cleveland's longer tortured, but it's one of those teams. Also, I'd rather be a Colts fan than a Browns fan.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I'm all over the map with my fandoms.
Yes, you are.
At least you're luck sad people. At least you're not a Vikings fan.
Yes.
That's all we got today, correct?
Yes. You can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers. You can follow Tony at TEastNBA. You can follow me at FreeMadam5. We'll be doing once a week shows from now until sometime mid-September. Then we'll start when there's some games to talk about. We'll switch to about two or three times a week, and then we'll eventually kick into full gear around the season start of five times a week. You can follow other podcasts on the Locked On Network, the Locked On NBA show, the Locked On NFL show. There's a Locked On Colts, obviously. Might be a little raw right now, but they're probably – you can go get some maybe more measured takes from them. I don't know. Honestly, I'll have to listen to what they say on their Monday show. But that's all for this Locked On Pacers podcast. We will see you guys again next week.